You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Prock, the presenter of the Prock Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Today is my Friday wrap-up show, and most of my shows this week have been short for a reason. We're not in the studio, and that sort of limits me, for example, to play clips, and I really have to do a lot of editing. So what I want to do today is first cover some breaking news. I think everyone has heard by now, I hope you've heard, that the resignation of the head of the Veterans Administration was both offered and with regrets accepted by President Barack Obama today. And many politicians, many of them Democratic politicians, were calling for the generals, calling for his resignation. Well, he's resigned, he's gone, and before he went, he fired a number of people. They were saying, or he was saying, and told Congress, one of the problems he had, and I've worked in the government when I was in the Air Force and worked with a lot of civilians, is it's virtually impossible to fire anyone. And if you want to fire someone, it takes you a long time. It's not like in the private sector. And I've spent virtually all my time in the private sector since leaving the Air Force many, many years ago. They want to fire you. They're going to fire you that day. And security will walk you out, or they'll give you a box, clean out your desk, and leave. And that is the way it's done in the private sector, not in the government. In the government, there's usually a long process, and it's difficult, especially the higher the person is. You know, if you're GS 14, 15, or executives pay scale, it is almost impossible. And if you want to, it's not going to be a pleasant process. It's not where the person in charge can fire people. Well, apparently one of his last acts was to fire several people in the Veterans Administration. The problem is the president should have asked for the general's resignation when he took the oath of office for the second time, because the Veterans Administration has been a problem for many, many years. Prior to even Bush was president. You can't blame it on Bush, but at least the Bush administration explicitly warned the transition team, Obama's transition team, about the problems in the Veterans Administration, and particularly them keeping two separate books. So it's not like President Obama just learned about it, because he did serve on the Veterans Committee in the Senate. Remember, he was a senator briefly, and he was aware of the problems. So it's not a question of not being aware. It's the impression I'm getting, and most people are getting, is his style of management, if you want to call it that, is very much hands-off. It's delegate and don't call me unless there's something real important. Well, you can't really do that, especially when you're running a large government, which the United States is. Now, yes, you need to delegate most of the work. I'm not saying he's not correct in that regard, but you also need to be a little bit more hands-on and, for example, have regular cabinet meetings, weekly cabinet meetings. He doesn't have them. And I'm not saying that's the cure, but you need to be in the loop. You need to ask, are there problems? And don't accept on blind faith. And the president knew there were problems in the Veterans Administration. And the answer, quite frankly, I don't think is just firing a guy at the top or several bureaucrats. And I've said it now for two shows, and I'll say it again. The government should not be in the business of running any business, including hospitals and physicians. You need you need to totally privatize that. And one way to do it, the first step, is give the veterans an option. If you're eligible for health care benefits, for example, as a result of a disability incurred when you are on active duty, you would get a voucher, and that voucher could be used either to purchase health insurance or deposit in your health savings account. And then that allows the veteran, for example, to go to his nearest doctor, his preferred choice in terms of a doctor and hospital. In other words, provide competition. Because in the private sector, you want to attract customers. You succeed by treating customers right and getting repeat customers. And that's in any business. You don't try to delay and delay and delay care. And that's what was happening. And that will happen under any government system. And the Democrats really haven't learned it. They're still pushing for single payer. They're even saying the scandals in the VA require single payer. They never seem to get it that the problem is a government monopoly. Wherever there's a government monopoly, invariably what happens is the cost goes up, the quality goes down. Look at public education, government schools, not public schools, government schools. That's what they are. They're government-run schools. Yes, there's some good ones, but most of them are terrible. And why? It's a combination of little or no competition and unions. And they have ruined education first through 12, 1 through 12, or kindergarten through 12. And that's what you get. You know what? And look at Medicare. Look at the government's involvement in healthcare. Everyone likes to rave about Medicare. They're running trillion dollar deficits. They're running in the red. It's not a well-run system. You might be happy with it until you have a major condition that's going to require hundreds of thousands of dollars, and then you're going to quickly find you better have bought either a Medicare supplement or Medicare Advantage because the government doesn't pay the full bill. Fill the complete bill. There's holes in it. And if you're poor, it's even worse in the sense that if you have to rely on Medicaid, first you're going to have the problem just finding a doctor that will take you. Does it sound familiar? And then if you have a serious medical condition that requires a specialist, good luck, because medicine is a business. It's not a charity. And doctors have limited time every day, week, or month. You know, most of them work anywhere from 2 to 4,000 hours a year. In other words, somewhere between 40 to 80 hours. Now, and they decide how many hours they want to work. So who do you think they're going to give priority to? Yes, their patient that can pay either by cash or have good insurance. And that means very little or no care for the poor. Now, some will say, well, that's the reason you need single payer. Single payer is just like the VA. It's just like what you have in Great Britain. And you see, you have a total different response. If you walk into a private hospital or a private doctor's office or call, they want to treat you right away. Why? Well, once they treat you, they can bill you and collect the money. That's why they're more responsive to consumer needs. That's not the case. It's not the case where you have a single-payer system. They're in the business of rationing care, delaying care, and long waiting lines, where you, even if you have an appointment, you'll sit there for hours. Now, when I set an appointment with my doctor or any service, I show up in time and I expect to be served on time, and I usually find out in advance how long it's going to take. And professionals respect that, and that is the standard. It's not what the Veterans Administration has been doing, and it's not just in the Phoenix office. I'm hearing more and more stories. This is widespread, and part of the problem is they simply don't have the resources. Now, why don't they have the resources, even though their budgets have dramatically increased? What's happened over the last 14, 15 years? Actually, the last 60 or 70 years. The United States has become the policeman of the world. And as a result, the United States has intervened in many, many countries across the world. And there are people advocating that, both in the Republican Party and in the Democratic Party. I don't think I have to remind you that we got into World War Two, partly because of the policies of FDR, embargoing iron and oil from the Japanese, pushed them to the wall and they attacked us. It was Harry S. Truman that responded to the Korean attack by getting the United States involved in North Korea. It was LBJ that got us involved in Vietnam. And yes, we had a Republican president, but really a progressive, a moderate Republican, that got us involved in Iraq. And then his son got us involved both in Afghanistan and Iraq. Now, I'm not saying some of those engagements weren't correct, but the point is, those were the major ones. There are many, many minor ones. The United States, no one appointed us policemen of the world. And it's a fool's errand to try to build democracies in countries where you don't know the language, you don't know the culture, and the people will resent your presence and consider yourself an occupier. And you become the ugly American. And eventually they start shooting at you and killing you. In other words, you're breeding resentment on the part of the natives of that country. It would be only natural. If the Chinese were occupying the United States, don't you think that's what would happen? I do. I certainly do. What I'm recommending is what's called a non-interventionist policy. Now, before I go any further, I believe in a real strong national defense. A real strong national defense. So that if any nation should threaten us or attack us, our response would be quick and decisive. And that's why I believe all use of military force where the nation is going to go to war should require, as the Constitution does require, that Congress declare that war. And the reason why you want that is you want the American people behind you. And you want a debate on the issue. What we don't want, and what we have gotten ever since the end of World War II, is presidents of both parties intervening. Many times this involves the military, but many other times it involves the use of the Central Intelligence Agency to overthrow foreign governments. And what has been the result? What has been the result? Just before this show, I looked at the U.S. debt clock, and it was running $17.5 trillion in debt. That's more than the entire real GDP of the United States this year. That's how much debt we've run up. And Obama's responsible for about $10 trillion of it. That's how bad it is in just the 5 years. Well, I want to be fair to him. He's responsible for about $7 trillion of it. Let me make a correction. I can do the math in my head. But what is that a symptom of? It's government spending is out of control. And a lot of that spending involves the Defense Department as well as the Veterans Administration. In other words, an empire is not cheap. What invariably brings down empires as well as republics is trying to keep an empire and build it up. Because part of the cost, and we're seeing it today, is the veterans come home. Many of them have been wounded seriously, some physically, some mentally. And many of the veterans get old. And they were promised benefits that really Congress cannot keep, because they don't have the resources. And as a result, you get what we're seeing today. Now, what I call for, besides the privatization of the veterans' hospitals, in other words, have the private sector run them, sell that off with the stipulation that many of those hospitals will specialize in unique conditions involving veterans. And what I mean by that, we have a lot of people that have head injuries, that were blinded or lost one or more limbs. So you could have specialization. A lot of the veterans like that. But have the private sector run it for a fee, because they know that if you do that, it's in their interest to serve their clients, in this case, or their customers, in this case, the veterans, in a timely manner and provide quality service, because they got to compete for that service. But for the vast majority of the veterans, to the extent that they qualify for veterans' health benefits, because as a result of a disability that they incurred when they are on active duty, give them a voucher. and let them decide what's best in terms of providing health care for them. In other words, increase competition and also increase veterans' choice. Now, there are a few people calling for that, but most of the politicians, and you can hear it in what they're saying, well, we need more money, we need more money, we need more money, as if more money was the answer. More money will get more bureaucracy and probably even more games being played. The answer is give the veterans choice to spend the money, the voucher that they get for a health insurance plan that enables them to go to their own doctor in their own near where they live. And that is the overwhelming choice of most people. Now, I'm not saying it's around the corner, but it's in, for example, I'm in Dallas. My family doctor is in Dallas. I haven't seen him in a long time. I really need to set up an appointment with him. But he's not in my neighborhood, but he's within 10 minutes of where I live. Because I'm in a major city, I'm within 15 minutes of at least four or five hospitals. And usually where there's a hospital right next door, they're professional buildings where doctors have their offices. I'm lucky in that regard. Many people live in rural areas or live in smaller cities. And if they need veterans benefits, they can't get them in their local city. Now, sometimes the Veterans Administration will set up a clinic, but the hospitals are usually in major cities like Dallas, like Phoenix. I'm just trying to give you a rational, reasonable response, and it's not spending more money on veterans benefits. Now, there are organizations, the American Legion, the Veterans for Foreign Wars, that are big advocates and try to protect the rights of veterans. I understand that. But you need to do what is really right by the veteran. And it's not waiting weeks, months, in some cases years, to get an appointment. That's not going to help them. They would have been much better off having a health insurance plan and then going to the doctor that's in the network for that insurance. That's what needs to be happening. And it's not one of these Obamacare plans that are much, much more expensive than what we had prior to the passage of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. We need to get back to that system, but make improvements in it. What disturbs me, I'm seeing some news reports that some Republicans, instead of calling for the repeal of Obamacare, which is exactly what I'm doing, are now saying, well, we might not, we'll just do it in bits and pieces. No. Obamacare is a disaster. Rip it up, throw it away, and propose something that makes sense to the American people, that relies on the free enterprise, that relies on free enterprise market capitalism, where you have competition. That's what you need. You don't need the government designing health insurance plans. You don't need the government saying what the deductibles should be, what's included in the plan, and in essence, dictating the designs. The private sector is perfectly capable of giving consumers a broad range of health insurance plans that will meet their needs, their wants, and their budgets. And that's what we had before this massive government intervention into the private sector, that the vast majority of the American people, I would say 60%, and that's probably low, don't want Obamacare. Well, if that's the correct number, I don't think these congressmen and senators should be changing their tune and selling out and betraying their own constituents. The American people don't want Obamacare. I know there's some in a Democratic Party, and many Democrats do, but they only have about 35% of the votes. Because you got to remember, you have independents and Republicans, and I've seen poll after poll of Americans, some in the Republican Party, some in the Democratic Party, some independents. And the numbers have been bouncing around, but it's typically 55 to 60%. It depends on how you word the question. And what I have found, that a lot of Americans simply don't understand Obamacare, but when they start to are forced to understand it, they hate it. Democrats thought that the more the people understood it, the more they like it. Well, in this case, it's just the opposite. The more they understand how it works, they can't stand it because it costs them a lot more money and it has a higher deductible. And remember, the Democrats and Obama are really, this is not what they want. They want single payer. And the best example of single payer in the United States is the Veterans Administration. Owned and operated by the government. Who's paying the bill? The American taxpayers are paying the bill. But you're not getting timely access to health care. You have to wait, wait, and wait. And that is the pattern. Wherever you have a single-payer system, health care is rationed. And you'll have delays and delays and delays. And why do they do that? What happens during those delays? People get sicker and many of them die. They're waiting you out. See, the way they sell single payer is to the young, healthy people. And they make sure, if they're smart, that they get taken care of. But when they get older and have more serious conditions, and that usually starts in the 40s and 50s and gradually gets worse in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, where you suddenly have cancer, heart attack, strokes, diabetes, high blood pressure, that you wait and wait and wait, and many of those people that are waiting will die. Problem solved. That's what the death panels are all about. And in some instances, well, you're too old. We won't give you the treatment. Thank you very much. Bye. Take an aspirin. And what happens? The person dies. Problem solved. I don't think that's what the American people want. The American people don't want single payer. They want the benefits of a free enterprise, market capitalism, where the consumer is sovereign. The consumer decides what goods and services they buy and what's affordable. Not the government. Not the government coercing you to buy a government design plan or forcing you into a single-payer system. And the more and more the government has gotten involved with health care, both in Medicare, Medicaid, Obamacare, and the Veterans Administration, what has happened? The quality has gone down. And the price has gone up. To put it simply, the government should get out of any business they're in, including healthcare. They ruin it for everybody. And that message needs to be clearly, clearly broadcast. See, one of the consequences of the United States being involved or intervening in country after country after country is that cost a lot of money, not only for the initial operation, but obviously for the veterans that get wounded and injured as a result. Empires are expensive, and empires inevitably lead to government spending getting out of control and the ultimate decline and fall of that empire. That's happened repeatedly through history. And what it leads to is warfare. Just think, after World War I, what was the result of World War I? It was the most bloodiest war in the entire history of the planet. But what fell after World War I? The Russian Empire, the German Empire, the Austrian Hungary Empire, and the Ottoman Empire. And what was really, I think, hurt was the British and the French Empire, even though they didn't lose it. You see, where you have empires, you have wars, and where you have wars, it is the citizens who get killed and wounded. And ultimately, it leads to the destruction of one or more states that were more or less controlled by the monarchy and the nobility in that country. I think there were 16, if my memory serves me, monarchs prior to World War I. 13 of those monarchies no longer exist as a result of both World War I and World War II. You see, for most of the history of the world, an oligarchy consisting of a monarch or king, a nobility or an aristocracy, as well as a clergy, have ruled that state. It's rare that it's one person. It's an oligarchy. It's a group. And who has suffered? And who was serfs or slaves? It's the common man. It's only in the United States, with its U.S. Constitution, that put limits on the government. That is what makes the United States exceptional. That was the first time you ever saw that, because they studied, the founding fathers studied the history of both republics and empires and knew that to prevent a recurrence or another monarchy happening in the United States with a nobility and aristocracy and a clergy supporting it, you needed to have a constitution that protected the people and had checks and balances. And it worked for many hundreds of years. Unfortunately, ever since the turn of the night, turn starting in World War One, but leading up to it, to today, you have progressives, then they changed their name to liberals, and now they're back to calling themselves progressives, that want to make the state bigger and bigger to control you, to limit your freedoms and liberties, because they simply are against the free enterprise market capitalist system. Instead, what you have gotten as a result of these progressives and liberals being in power, and they have, they've been in the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, not every Republican or every Democrat, but the vast majority of the leadership of both parties have been interventionists into the U.S. economy as well as intervention abroad. And what has that led to? More and more government programs, more and more government departments, more and more government spending, and a massive deficit of over $17.5 trillion and growing. By the end of the year, it'd be $18 trillion. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is just the tip of the iceberg. Because what I have not mentioned, and this will probably shock many of you, is the so-called unfunded liabilities for Social Security, Medicare, Obamacare, and I will say this, the Veterans Administration. And there we're talking, there are a broad range of estimates. You have government agencies that put out a report every year, and you also have private economists looking at it. But conservative estimates, it's over $100 trillion and it's growing. In other words, they can't pay for the benefits they promised. The way the progressives, the liberals, the interventionists, what I call the collectivists and what some call the statists, do, they promise you benefits. They're really Santa Claus socialists. They promise benefits, goodies, goodies, goodies. The problem is many of those politicians that promise that are long dead, but the liabilities are still there, and they can't pay for them. That's the dirty little secret. The United States is broke. It's broke. I know many of you like Social Security. I do. Who wouldn't? You get a check from the government. And like Medicare. But you better wake up. They're going broke, especially the Medicare entitlements and the Medicaid entitlements and the Obamacare entitlements. There's not enough money to pay the bills. That's why you have shortages. That's why you have rationing. And that is also why you have the Central Bank of the United States, the so-called Federal Reserve, inflating or decreasing the purchasing power of the dollar. Because the government is not going to technically default and not pay the bondholders or the holders of Treasury securities, whether they be bills, notes, or bonds. They're going to just issue more. The problem is the dollars that the investors get back are worth less and less due to inflation. So, ladies and gentlemen, the United States is in serious problem. It is a declining empire that is about to fall. You can't continually do this. Run these massive deficits and monetize the debt. All the Federal Reserve does is they sit at a keyboard and they create what's called Federal Reserve notes, and those notes are used to purchase Treasury securities. And what the U.S. Treasury Department does, it takes those notes and pays the bills. All they're doing, the short term is they're printing money, but technically they're not printing money. They're creating money, though, at a keyboard into a database. Now, why should you be concerned about it? Why should you be concerned about it? It's called inflation. As Milton Friedman said, all inflation, I'm paraphrasing here, inflation is always a monetary phenomenon. In other words, it's the Federal Reserve System, or the Central Bank of the United States, is creating money. And what they're really doing is financing the federal government, because they've been running massive deficits now. $1 trillion, you know, $1.4 trillion, $1.3 trillion, about $1 trillion. I think last year it was $680 billion. Some improvement there. Not much, but some. And this year, it's at $300 billion, but I think that's low. I think when we get to the end of September, it'll be at least $500 billion or $500 billion. How can they keep doing that? Simple. All the Fed's doing is creating money. and you get the impact, go to your grocery store. Go to your grocery store. Have the prices been coming down? I have not seen it. Occasionally there's a sale, but the trend is not down. The trend is up. Not too long ago, I could buy a gallon of milk for $2. Today, it's $3 or more. And not too long ago, I could buy gasoline for $1.50 a gallon. It is now $3.60 a gallon. I was driving here to campus, and I said, well, it seems to be a race on. Will milk prices finally be higher than getting a gallon of gasoline? And they're both more than doubled since Obama has been in office. And they keep going up, up, and up. You see, what the central bank is doing is making sure that when the federal government pays off its debt, it's worth less money. And they do that by creating inflation. That's what they're doing. And all inflation means to you and me is your money is worth less. In other words, what your purchasing power has been declining. That's what's going on. Now, there's another side effect, and it's important. And we got news of it 2 days ago when the Department of Commerce Bureau of Economic Analysis came out with its second estimate. It's a revised estimate, and is the one that I typically put more credence in. I really never pay that much attention to the advance estimate. The advance estimate for the first quarter GDP, and this is a month ago, was that it was 0.1%. Very close to zero. Well, my suspicion was, and a number of economists shared it, that when the second estimate, the revised estimate, came in, which has more complete data, that it was going to be negative, and it was. It was a negative 1%. We're halfway to a recession. Now, the National Bureau of Economic Research has a committee that actually does the timing of when a recession starts and when a recession ends. And they usually look for two quarters of negative real decline in the gross domestic product. Well, we've had our first quarter of decline. Now, I would say the consensus is, I don't share in the consensus, by the way, is there a lot of indications that we'll have a positive second quarter growth. We're two-thirds there. The second quarter is April, May, and June. We will really not have an advance estimate until July, and really the second estimate until the end of August. And you'll have to wait to the end of August to see whether or not the economy did bounce back. Or we're in a recession. Now, I've sort of given up making predictions because I get the timing wrong. I think we're pretty good. Let me put it this way. In the next 2 years, we're going to be in a recession. The only question is when. And I think it's going to be this year because Europe is in a recession, especially the southern part or the Eurozone. China's rate of growth has dramatically gone down. You have droughts in several countries, severe droughts, including the United States, and food prices are skyrocketing worldwide. You got to take a big picture and look what's going on. I don't think that's good, folks. External shocks, including droughts worldwide, interfering with the growth of food. Beef prices I don't eat beef. Lucky me. Because beef prices in the United States are on record highs. Why? Because of the drought, you don't have the hay that you need to feed the cattle. So if you like your hamburger or steak or any other type of beef, any animal that requires, feed, your food prices are going to go up. Now, that's separate from what the central bank is doing. Now, why is that important? Why is that important? If we go into recession, you're going to see 8, 9, 10, 11% or higher unemployment rates. This is already the worst economic recovery since World War II. You have to go back to the Great Recession in the 1930s to see a recovery or lack of recovery. We're still about a million jobs short of the previous high in employment in the United States, which was November of 2007, when in round numbers there were 146.6 million Americans employed. That's terrible, folks. There should be close to 160 million people employed, not 145 million, which is approximately where we're at. It's a little bit higher than that, probably 145.5 million if my memory serves me. But that's not where we should be. We should be near 160 million Americans. And that's why we've had these persistently high unemployment rates, above 6%, for the entire Obama administration. And those are, that's the government's so-called headline number, or U3, what they call the U3 number. You really need to look at the U6 number, which is a broader measure of unemployment. Ladies and gentlemen, if we go into another recession, it's not going to be pretty, because we've run up massive debts. We've had the Fed more or less pumping money into the economy. And the bankers, because they were dramatically hit, because they were sitting on assets that were depreciating, namely your mortgage-backed securities, what they've been doing is protecting themselves by not lending, or to the extent that they're lending, it's hard to get a loan. It's not impossible, and there's been some improvement, but for many years after the financial crisis, good luck. They were canceling lines of credits. It's a warning, folks. We're in dangerous waters, and there's no single thing you can do to stop this. And that's the problem. There's no single thing to do to stop it. But the place to begin is to cut government spending at the federal level, and cut the tax rates that are burdening Americans. In other words, you need an environment that encourages business formation as well as capital formation. If you want to grow the economy, the jobs are created in the private sector, not the government sector, the private sector, by small new businesses. And you need an economic environment that encourages. The current economic environment does not do it. Business formation is down, as is capital investment, as is savings. If you want to grow the economy, you need savings, not consumption, savings and investment, and a climate conducive for people to take economic risk. And starting a business is an economic risk. And only if entrepreneurs do that will you see the growth in the real GDP, as well as a decline in unemployment, or more people being employed. But Washington, D.C., even though it is prospering, especially the immediate surrounding area, they are creating uncertainty throughout the U.S. economy. That is the economic consequences of out-of-control government spending, increasingly rising national debt, and an explosive growth in unfunded liabilities that are over $100 trillion. And there's simply not the leadership. I really think there are only a few people in Washington, in Congress, that understands the urgency and really understands what's going on. You know, if you don't have a clue and you don't know what you should be doing, you don't do anything. Like our president. He's never had any real executive experience until he was elected president. And we paid the price for his inexperience and his incompetence. He doesn't have a clue. We need someone not only that has the experience, but has the understanding, the vision, the will, and the courage to do something about it. And ladies and gentlemen, I don't see anyone in the Democratic Party, including Obama, including Hillary Clinton. Everything Hillary Clinton has touched, healthcare when she was given that by her husband, and foreign policy when she was given the position, has turned into disasters. And that is the leading Democratic contender. Someone that really has not had executive experience, and the few instances where she has, she's turned it into disasters. I don't hire failures, and that's what she is. She's another failure, just like Obama. We can't afford three failures in a row, and I'm including Bush, because he started this out-of-control government spending, and the Republicans went along with it in Congress, and they're the leadership now. And their answer is open borders? Are you out of your mind? The American people are hurting. You have millions looking for a full-time job, and the idiots in Washington, D.C. of both parties are speaking out of both sides of their mouth. They're selling the American people and the American worker down the drain. With the invasion, we've had now at least a 15-year invasion of this country by illegal aliens, somewhere between 2 to 4 million a year. And it's added up to today, there's somewhere between 30 and 50 million illegal aliens, and many of them. I don't know the exact number. I just go by what I hear the Border Patrol telling me, that for every one they apprehend, 3 to 5 get away. And where do they go? They go to sanctuary cities such as Dallas and take the jobs from American citizens. But they're just part of the problem. But that is supposedly the answer given by the Obama administration and the Democrats and the establishment Republicans, both in the House and the Senate and some former governors, including Jeb Bush. We don't need another Bush, we don't need another Clinton, and we certainly don't need a status quo Republican. That's why I'm not a Democrat or Republican. I've given up on both parties. They have betrayed me and the American people over and over and over. They're elitist. They're for big interventionist government. They're what I call bigs, big interventionist government status. They want a massive government. The only difference between the Republican Party and the Democratic Party is what they want to spend the money on. Neither party in recent years has been capable of balancing the budget. And that's just a starter. We have unfunded liabilities that are exploding. And we have a national debt that is exploding. And we've run deficit after a deficit. Yet there's no leadership. There is no leadership out of Washington. We have a massive leadership deficit. And it's not like the Republican Party or independents don't have leaders. They do have leaders. But what happens? You have to fight your own party to win. And what I mean by that is the ruling elites. I call them the bigs. I also have another word for them. The political elitist establishment, the peas. They're peeing on the American people. And anyone, for example, that runs from the Tea Party movement, they try to make sure that an establishment figure beats them out. They feel threatened, which they should be, by the Tea Party movement, by libertarians, and by conservatives, traditional conservatives. And they should be threatened, because I want to throw those bums out, whether they're in the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. They might talk conservative, but their big spending is socialism, folks. They're socialist, whether they call themselves conservative, progressive, liberal. Don't be fooled by the label. Actions is what matters. How they vote is what matters. And if they're voting for more and more money for bigger and bigger government, they're not fiscally responsible. They're irresponsible. And they don't understand what it's doing to the American people. And the few that do are running scared, because the American people are slowly but surely waking up. My only concern is I don't think we have much time. It is fixable. It can be turned around. And I have a lot of ideas how to do that. But we need leadership. We need people that can communicate. But we also need people that can build an organization, another third party. I'm not with the majority of the talk show hosts that are on the air that are, well, we got to take over the Republican Party. We got to get our people in. I think that's a fool's errand, because you're going to spend a lot of time and resources fighting to just get on the Republican ticket. Short circuit that. Establish a successful third party. Remember, about 43% of vote today identify themselves as independent. In other words, both the Republican Party and the Democratic Party are losing their bases, because the people are waking up. And don't waste your time either in the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. Establish another party. And that takes money, it takes organization, it takes a message, it takes momentum, and it also takes ambition. And it's not going to happen with one person or one election. It's going to take years to turn it around. And my fear is we don't have years. It might be all over, because they're pushing right in the next 60 to 90 days. They're going to have a big push to make millions, tens of millions of illegal aliens get legal status, and quickly after they get legal status, and that means they can work here, they'll get citizenship. And if that happens, the ball game is over, because then they have the votes. And then my advice, look for another country. We've lost our exceptionalism. We're like all the other countries. We're ruled by collectives that believe that the ends justify the means. And what they're all about is making you dependent upon the government. They're about power and keeping in power and controlling you by limiting your freedoms. In other words, they don't believe in consumer sovereignty. They believe in the government, and the government coercing you as to where you live, what you buy, how you behave. That's what they're about. They're about power and keeping power. And it's epidemic both in the Democratic Party, which is, as far as I'm concerned, a far leftist party, as well as more and more in the Republican Party. That's why I'm for an independent party, a new independent and successful party. And that's going to take time, money, energy, and the involvement of literally millions. But, and here's the big but, you don't have to convince everybody. A couple of million people becoming involved could turn this Tea Party movement into a viable party. And that's what I'm hoping will happen. You've been listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Have a great weekend, and to start your great weekend, listen to America the Beautiful. Good day. Thank you.